And welcome to a special presentation. I'm Bill Little. I'm minister of Pacific Coast Church. We meet here Sundays at 10 and 11:30. That's the plug. And our church endeavors to bring to our peninsula speakers, to our community, speakers who have knowledge and understanding to share about many areas of life. And tonight we're very pleased to have Dr. Gary Richmond here, who's going to be talking about adolescence, the stages of adolescence, and how to understand what's going on in this very interesting but sometimes chaotic level of life. Gary is one of these people who has one foot in L.A. and one foot here on the peninsula. That's a long stance, you know. He's here part of the week, he's down there part of the week, and he's worked for many years with teens. He's worked at the Children's Hospital in L.A. and Cedars-Sinai, where he's run psychiatry groups and whatnot. And I met him months ago, and we just hit it off just like that. You know, we had lunch, and it was just like a kindred soul. We just had a good time together, and I was really delighted to find out that adolescents were his major focus in his therapy. Because my wife and I have a 14 and a half year old now, who is managing to shake the very roots of our reality. And so we got to talking, and it's been wonderful having him here working with people in the local area. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Dr. Gary Richmond. He's going to talk to us for about an hour, I think, and then there'll be time for question and answers. And all of this, by the way, will be taped. And if you wish, the tapes will be available immediately. We can reproduce them for you right away there at the back. So just let David know if you're interested. Gary Richmond. I don't know, when it comes to adolescence, you should maybe hold your applause till the end to see if it's worthwhile. I thought it was appropriate. As I was driving over here, I think the moon is full. Interesting to talk about adolescence on a full moon. I think we can really talk about chaos at that point. What I'm going to be doing is talking the first half hour on kind of defining what an adolescent is. So sometimes it isn't who, though I beg your apology to those teens in the group. You can probably help me out on some of this. The second half hour, what I want to do is talk about how parents can get out of way of being those heavy enforcers, where it's constant groundings and consequences and dealing with the teenager and not living with them. And then the last half hour, hopefully I will have poked your interest enough to have some questions. And also, I invite you to give me very specific scenarios, as much as you'd like to divulge in front of other people, about dealings with your adolescent, and be happy to answer some of those things and talk about some of those things, because it spurs a lot of discussion that I think is helpful for other parents here as well. Okay, so what is an adolescent? I mean, just when you figured out how to diaper and how to send them to school and how to dress them and how to feed them and how to pretty much deal with having them do their chores and take the trash out and be home on time, they enter into this new realm that is totally chaotic and totally strange and totally a part of not what you're used to. When I was at Children's Hospital LA in the Adolescent Medicine Clinic, I got a call one day, and the woman called up and said, you know, is this one of the therapists in the Adolescent Clinic? And I said, yes. And she said, I've got a real problem. I think my son is psychotic. And I said, well, could you describe some of the symptoms? She said, well, he used to really have a communication with me, and he used to really, we'd talk and we'd go places. He would do his homework. He never cut school. He would always do his chores. He was really a part of the family, and I loved him dearly, and we had such a connection. And all of a sudden, I don't understand. He won't talk to me. He hides out in his room. He's isolating. He's not dealing with me at all, not doing his chores. And what's worse is he's also starting to cut school, which he used to love. And I think he's gone crazy. And I asked a very simple question. I said, how old is your son? And she said, 13. I said, welcome to adolescence. And that is what it's about. I have on the board some things that I'll be pointing out. What I'd like to do is have people think in their minds about that adolescence is that line between child and adult. Is very unknown territory that's not really mapped out well, and no one really knows what to do. I'm going to be discussing defining the early, mid, and late stages of adolescence. Most people thought it was like, oh my God, I thought I just had a teenager, but you mean there's stages to this? And the reality is yes, and you need to deal with those stages differently because your adolescent's going through strange times. One of the things that I think is real important when talking about adolescence is dealing with the issue that they are a child emerging into an adult. And they are in that no man's land, if you will, of new experiences and new chaoses. adolescents, especially in the early stages, but all the way through, are dealing with changes in intellectualization, they're dealing with changes in terms of environment, they're dealing with changes in terms of their own culture, in terms of their peers, they're dealing with changes in the psychodynamic aspect of the ego, which I'll get into, they are dealing with changes in body chemistry, in the way they look at other people, and the way they deal with their families. Everything is exploding all at once, and I mean all at once. And the hard part for parents is that they can't seem to, quote-unquote, get a handle on what's going on with their adolescent. Well, the deal is the adolescent can't either. The deal about adolescents is they're heading into that line in the middle as well, and they don't know where they are. They don't have experiences. If we go through a new job, or we go through a new relationship, or we go through a change in living situation, most of the time, if we're in our late 20s and 30s, certainly 40s and above, we have had experiences to look back on and say, okay, when this new experience happens, or when this experience happens, I may be anxious, I'm a little uptight, I may be a little scared, but I know I can handle it because I've been there before. How many times have we said, though this is a rocky time, we've been there before, we can get through it? Adolescents don't have that experience. They do not have the experience to fall back on and say, I'm okay. Every day is a new day. Every chemical change, every physical change, every intellectual change, every thought process change, every analytical approach to things, peers, the way peers relate to them in those stages is different. And they don't have the years to look back on to say, oh, I've been there before. I know what that's like. I know that if I get rejected here, or having trouble here, or I don't fit in here, or I feel like I'm outside here, or I get depressed here, or I'm not relating to people the way I want, or my parents don't understand me, I'll get through it because I've been here before. They don't have that. And we need to understand that as the adults. We need to understand they are just as chaotic and confused as we feel chaos and confusion from them. And we really need to understand that. And what we need to understand is that they are volleying, probably until what I'll define as late adolescence, between child and adult. They are not either a child, and it is disrespectful to think of them as that, and they will tell you so, clearly, but they are not an adult. Not just in terms of chronological years of what the law says is an adult. But what we know as adults looking back, we don't have those adult experiences and those adult judgments that can keep us working in a way that feels safe and feels constructive. And so they're in that no man land without any parameters. How many of you feel when you have done things and not had hooks or anchors or some base to hold on to? When you don't have that base, you know when you feel, mostly when I deal with patients a lot and they feel really spaced out, really difficult, like life's very tough, is when work is very difficult and changing, and the home life in terms of a long relationship is changing, or maybe a short relationship isn't working so well, or there are changes at home. I've dealt a lot with corporate businessmen who the home isn't working as well anymore after 15 or 20 years, and the business isn't working as well, and they're going through midlife. They don't know where to light. They don't know where to get centered. They don't know what to do. Well, for teenagers, school is a place that they are constantly on the line of acceptance. And home is the place they don't want to be. Because by physiological chemistry, almost by design, psychodynamically in terms of psychology, home is what they're getting away from. Now, it's not the literal home. They love their room. They'll stay in their room, give them a TV, give them a computer, and give them a phone, and maybe a refrigerator, they'll hang out there forever because that's their niche. But as soon as they walk out of that door into the home, they are in a place that they are almost physiologically rebelling from. And what the adolescence is about from that child to adult stage is called individuation and separation. It is their job to separate from the family. What does that mean? They don't love you anymore? They don't want to be with you? You're very weird? No. They may think that. I got two teenagers laughing over here. They're going, yeah, they are weird. But the deal is that what is going on is they are moving from that child identity of the family. There's mom, there's dad, there's me, there's my brother, there's my sister, or if it's a single parent home, there's my mom, and there's, you know, maybe a boyfriend, girlfriend, and there's, but that's the identity as a child. Moving into adulthood, we know as adults, our identity, hopefully, is inside of us. And we bring our family to us and create our family in terms of who we want to be. The adolescent is trying desperately, almost physiologically, to move into their own identity. And the only identity they understand to get away from are the parents. So in early adolescence, at 11 or 12, you start seeing them walking 2 or 3 feet ahead of you or 2 or 3 feet behind you. They don't want to sit in the movie theater with you. They don't want to go on family vacations anymore. It's not that they don't like you, though parents take it personally, and that's what we're going to talk about. It's not that they don't like you. It's that they are doing their thing by design and nature to move toward that adult goal. And it's our job, and that's what I'm going to talk about in the second part of this. How do we let them do that while not go crazy, and also treat them more like the child and stifle the emerging adult? And it's difficult. When I was the therapist for at Children's Hospital for the medical inpatient adolescents. I tell this story a lot because I think it dramatizes what goes on with teens. I had a new resident who was going to talk to a 15, 16-year-old Caucasian male about surgery. And she walked in, and she was a little nervous, and I watched her, and she walked up to this male. It was kind of pretty serious surgery. And she said, "So, do you have any questions?" Now, what she saw was an adult, because she didn't really want to see the child. Docs aren't too good at that anyway. Hope there are no docs here, but that's not part of your training. And we all know that, so I don't think I'm offending anybody. But we see the adult. You look at a 14, 15, certainly 16-year-old adolescent, they're almost full height. As an adolescent girl, pretty much her figure is full-blown. Guys are shaving. Puberty is totally into that, and they look adult. Voices have changed. They look like they're adults. And that's, they see that. They want to be treated like adults because they're also emerging into adulthood. But there's still that child inside. And I don't mean the inner child, as I gave a talk here before. That's there too. But the child is still there, the one that doesn't know how to really work the world, the one who doesn't really know how to negotiate in the world, the one who doesn't really know how to get a job, the one who doesn't really know how to survive outside of the house, so they'd like to let you think they do. The deal is that this person went in and she saw the adult lying in bed, said, "What do you think is going on with the surgery, and do you have any questions?" And he wanted to be a tough guy. He was, you know, 16 years old, and he was in the hospital, and he was going to show that he knew what he was doing, so he said, "Well, you know, my doctor pretty much told me what was going to go on, and I don't think I have any questions. Is there anything you want to tell me?" And she said, "No, not particularly," and she walked out. I walked up to him, and I pulled up a chair, and I sat down, and I said, "Now, what's really going on inside about the fact that they're going to do surgery on you tomorrow?" And a tear came down his eye, from his eyes. And the child, you know, when we get sick as adults, our child is very present. We want to be nurtured. We want to be taken care of. We want to be brought some food. We want someone to take care of us. And the adolescent male was scared. But it's not cool to be scared, especially with a female doc. That's you know, that's not okay. And so he started crying, and I said, "What scares you the most?" And I took a list. And I said, "What I'm going to do is talk to Dr. So-and-so, who's just here, and if it's okay with you..." And we're going to be talking about asking permission within an already structured framework. "If it's okay with you, I'd like to have her come back and answer some of these questions." And he said, "Okay." She saw the adult. She didn't want to deal with the feelings of the child, and so she attended to that. Sometimes we get caught in either dealing with the child, or they're screaming so they want to be adult. We want to attend to the adult because they're looking like that. And we have to be careful of dealing with those things and that duality, because that duality exists from age 11. Well, I won't, my late adulthood I say till 24, but in this case I'll say to at least 20, that duality is constantly in motion, and it flip-flops all the time. You know, you got an adult son or daughter who's dating, and they're pretty sure that this is love, and they're clear on how it feels, and they know how they feel about this person, and then something happens, and they're crying like, you know, a latency age or earlier kid, because it hurts and they don't know what to do with it. Again, new experiences. If you can realize that your adolescent every day, or certainly every 6 months, is dealing with totally new experiences from inside physiologically And we know what chemistry's like. Any of you gotten on some bad medication or been on medication, it can change your whole being, or aren't on medication when you should be on medication. We know chemistry just triggers us and volleys us right out of the room. It can cause depression, it can cause mania, it can cause us to be very hyper, it can cause us to have bad judgment, it can cause us to be impulsive, it can cause us to be irritable. Teenagers are getting hyped with chemicals every day that they don't know what to do. My stepson now is 20. When he was 13, he was banging in the walls. His testosterone was off the limit. He kept walking around pushing things and bumping things, and he didn't know what to do. He was so full of this new chemistry that was going on. And he was sprouting. The way we knew he was going into the growth spurt is he, like, literally attacked the refrigerator and ate everything in sight. We all, oh, he's growing again. You know, it's a problem of feeding them. You know, they keep growing. But if you can imagine what chemistry has been like for you, realize your adolescent's going through it daily. And they never experienced it before. They don't know what it's like. You know, my best analogy is that I was dealing with a 24-year-old woman who had just gotten sober and had done freebasing and alcohol since she was 13. She didn't know the cue for a cold. She didn't know the cue for a menstrual cramp. She looked at me and said, "I feel really weird. What's going on?" Next week she came and said, "You know, I got the flu." I didn't know what that felt like. Adolescents are going through, "I don't know what that feels like," all the time. We need to remember that. So that kind of, I want to set that as a foundation. I want to hopefully jar your reality of what teens are in terms of a pain in the butt, and see that they are this entity like a flower that is blooming and emerging and going through chemical changes all the time, with experiences that they have no idea particularly what to do with. They are flying by the seat of their pants every day. And if we can think about that, you can maybe empathize and align with the struggle instead of wanting to control it, which happens a lot with parents. Because it worked really well when they were 6, 7, and 8. Why shouldn't it work when they're 11, 12, and 13? Besides, they're more out of control now. I should control them even more than I did when they were 8. It doesn't work. And I'll get to that. So let's deal with the early stages. Though it's teenager, starts at 11. I don't particularly know a parent who likes their 10 and a half or 11-year-old daughter, actually. Daughters start hitting kind of an early pubescence around 11. Guys hit it more 13, 14, and it can get very crazy at that stage. But what you start seeing, and I have a sheet here that was developed by the Adolescent Medicine Clinic. It's somewhat dated, but it will still give you a sense of things. And I'm going, they will be passed out after the talk. They'll be over on the desk over there. And what this does is it breaks up early, mid, and late adolescence into four categories, five. Body image, sexuality, cognition, socializations, and family. Because I want you to think about that. What I also want you to think about as I'm going through these stages is the fact that if you check with your teenager, we know that when we get past 25, age is somewhat relative, and it doesn't change significantly other than maybe every 5 to 10 years. What I want you to take away from this talk is that teenagers change every 2 years. And if you think, like, yes, so what? What I want you to think about is that there isn't a 13-year-old that doesn't think an 11-year-old is a child. And there isn't a 15-year-old that wouldn't hang out, that would hang out with a 13-year-old because they're ridiculous. And 17-year-olds, unless it's a dating situation, think 15-year-olds are kind of behind the time. I mean, they're just kind of high school kids. It changes every 2 years dramatically. Again, the chemistry deal, the changes, I want you to realize that. There isn't a 15-year-old around that thinks a 13-year-old is at their level. It's only 2 years. How many of us, you know, I'm 44. I mean, for me to talk to a 40-year-old or a 35-year-old or a 45-year-old or a 50-year-old, it's like I'm hanging out. We have a lot to talk about. Maybe every 10 years is a generational difference. Teenagers, it's every 2 years. Can you imagine? Take your age. Think of someone 2 years younger and you think they are totally out of the ballpark of being possibly able to relate to who you are. It's staggering. Adolescence is awesome in that way. There's no other time that speaks to that. None. Think of 2 years old. Our 15-year-old thinks a 17-year-old is really cool. They're driving. They're about to get out of high school. They understand the dating thing compared to a 15-year-old. That's pretty cool. 15-year-old guys don't have a chance with a 17-year-old girl. How many 44-year-old men have a chance with a 46-year-old woman? Pretty good. 15-year-old boy does not have a chance with a 17-year-old girl. She'd look at him like, what, are you kidding? I'm dating 19-year-old guys from college. I really want you to hold on. I know I'm repeating it, but it is so important. Every 2 years, 24 months, they are in a totally new different place. In terms of body image, in terms of sexuality, in terms of socialization, in terms of cognitions, in terms of how they relate to their own family. So let's touch base with that somewhat. 11 to 14, what's happening is that start on the body image, the ego as a child, when babies, the ego is the mouth. Everything's in the mouth. That's the self. They check it out that way. With toddlers, more into latency. Latency is like 6 to 10 years old. The ego is with the family. Am I accepted? Am I not? Am I an okay kid? Am I not okay kid? Am I in trouble? Am I not in trouble? Am I big enough to not have a car seat anymore? Am I big enough to go with you someplace? Am I big enough to handle something in the kitchen by myself? Am I big enough to stay home alone? The ego is a part of the family, checking out, am I good or not? Am I okay or not? Well, 11 years old starts to hit, start to get into adolescence. The ego is with peers. The ego is not with a home anymore. That's the separation issue. It's not that they don't like you anymore. It was Mark Twain who said, adolescents feel that adults are just totally out to lunch. But it amazes the adolescent when they get to be 20 how smart parents have gotten. And that is the shift. But at 13, or in 11 or 12, the starting of the ego, shifting out of the family, away from the family. I don't want to be a kid anymore. I'm moving on that pattern. The ego's with peers. And what is the identifiers of peers? Rock and roll, or basic music, dress, and am I accepted? You ask an adolescent, they can look in a crowd and tell you exactly what group belongs to what. Are they punk? Are they heshers? Are they gangsters? Are they nerds? Are they the jocks? What groups do they fall into? And they know, because of the dress. Those of us who grew up in the 60s, we had our dress. It was real clear. And we dressed it. And I remember being in high school, about to graduate high school, and our principal came out and said he was shocked at the generation today. That they had no higher goals, no higher aspirations, and nothing more to identify with than musical groups that were named after insects, the Beatles, the Birds. He got up and he said that. And I remember looking at him going like, this man is out to lunch. And that's how teenagers look at us. Their groups, their way of coloring their hair, their clothes, don't take it personally. It's not about you. It's not about you. It's about you when you try and control them and you don't respect them. And I'll talk about how that manifests. But it's not about you. It's about them. They become totally egocentric. It's not about the family anymore. The ego is involved in one thing and one thing only, inclusion. Inclusion and acceptance with peers. The thing I hear when I work with adolescents, the one thing that is the most heartbreaking to them of all, is that they feel they're outside looking in. You talk to an adolescent who's depressed, who may be suicidal, who's having a real hard time, who may be flirting or into drugs or alcohol, they are feeling outside, which means their ego is locked out. Their sense of self, identity, and acceptance is locked out. So when they're doing their hair and they're doing their clothes and they're doing their music and they're doing, it's not about you. And so, yeah. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. They are feeling that they are outside looking in to those who are cool, those who are in. Man, in my high school, it was really interesting. We had levels. There were the upper patio kids, the middle patio kids, and the kids who kind of hung out on the grass. And you were identified by that. And it is A groups, B groups, C groups. It is all it is for teens. Now their job is to go to school, and we'll talk about that as well. But how they are, who they are, is about how they're accepted, and not by you, but by their peers. And I keep repeating it because it's so important. If you can hold on to that and not personalize it and not try to control it, but align yourself with their struggle and see what they go through every day trying to figure out what the heck they're going to do to make it and be accepted, you can come a long way with aligning with their identity, aligning with their egos, and then working with them instead of trying to control the kid. Okay. In terms of, I'm not going to go over the whole list because I don't want to do a lot of that, but what's mostly important in terms of 11 to 14 is it's the beginning of individuation separation. It's the beginning of the ego outside of the family. It's the beginning of chemistry changes. And they are being devastated with chemistry. And you'll see them go in and out of cycles of things. Kind of watch those cycles. That everything is starting to be about peers. And sometimes we as parents are not ready to let them go. Wait a minute, you were just 10 last year. We were going to the movies together. We were going on vacation together. And now you won't sit with me in the movie theater? You don't want me to kiss you goodbye at school? You don't want me to hold your hand? You don't want me to tell you how to dress anymore? Well, like, so who am I to you? And we get abandoned. No one told us we have children to raise them to leave us. We thought they were supposed to be ours. Sure, we're going to help them and facilitate them to be adults, but they're supposed to stay around. Certainly not by 11. And nobody tells you. You flew by the seat of your pants having diaper changes, dealing with their illnesses. You flew by the seat of their pants so they got to be 6, 7, and 8, and they were toddling around and dealing with the why questions and all those things. And by 8 or 9, you figure, okay, we're going to soccer, we're doing things together, I got this wired. All of a sudden, they become 11, and it's like, screw you. I don't really care about you a whole lot. I mean, I need my allowance, and I need to be driven somewhere, and, you know, I really need some new clothes for school, but, you know, outside of that, I'm not sure why you're really useful to me. And that's the egocentrism. That is the egocentrism of the adolescent. It's what it's about. They get totally self-absorbed. It's their job. It's their job to be totally self-centered. Besides, with all that buzzing going on between the chemistry, the intellectual changes, the ego changes, the body changes, the social changes, the peer changes, and they left elementary school and had to go to a whole new school, this middle school. What's this about? I don't even know how to walk here. Now I've got to deal with peers I haven't seen before and fit in. Tough. You want me to deal with, like, what you're about? I gotta survive out there. I have a wonderful comic that I show to my adolescents. It's like, it's a Dennis the Menace comic. And he's kind of leaning up against the door, and there's kind of a whirl around his head, and he says, today was really a tough day to be me. And that's how teens feel a lot. It's a tough day for them to be them, especially now. 60s weren't no easy time, but this, I would not want to be a teenager now. There were a lot of free things going on back then. There's nothing going on free now. Everything's got serious penalties. I don't just mean sexually. In lots of ways. The American dream has been kind of stepped on in some ways. Kids don't figure they grow up, they go to college, and they have the house with white picket fence anymore. People are out of work. It's scary. We had something to look forward to. I remember my father saying, go to college, you'll make $50,000 more than the next guy. He was a little off, and I talked to him about that, but he was not far wrong. So that's what early adolescence is about. Okay, so you're just starting to figure out how to handle this 14, 12, 13, 14-year-old. You're just figuring out, okay, I've got some of this done. A new entity pops up. There's a 15th birthday. There's a whole new shift. And what it says here that I love, Dr. Marilyn Mayer was the woman who was heading the adolescent clinic when I was there, and we kind of put this together. It was fun. It was like, we talk about the early adolescence at the top. You'll see it says, out of chaos. Because it is chaotic as they move into that early adolescent stage. What we talk about in terms of the middle stage is what's hungering? Because there's all these hungers going on. In terms of the themes, you'll see here that it talks about being in love, and it talks about some grieving that goes on. In terms of body image, and things have changed somewhat now, because I think kids are growing up even faster than when we maybe put this together. But what happens at 15 is, there's a starting to deal with, as you read here on the early adolescence, you'll see that it says in terms of sexuality, there's basically a lot of giddy kind of things, and magazines under the mattress, and people watching R-rated movies that the folks aren't home. You know, there's toying with it as they're starting to come into pubescence and that kind of thing. At 15 to 17 and a half, they're in the middle area of adolescence, and girls have hit their pretty much their peak in terms of their figures and coming around, and guys are shaving, they are ready to date, and a dating issue starts. So here the adolescent has just had a couple of years of just dealing with handling their own chemistry changes, and all of a sudden there's all this pressure from peers, again, where your ego is, who you're dating, who you're hanging out with, you know? What do you know? What have you been involved with? Oh, that's all. And a lot of that kind of peer pressure going on from adolescents in the middle stages. You know, plus they really, at 11 to 14, they would tolerate your chauffeuring them around. Now at 15, it's like, I get a car next year, right? I take driver's training and I get my license, and on my 16th birthday, I'm out of here. And you go, well, maybe. They go, what do you mean, maybe? I'm 16, I should get that. Well, how you doing in school? Well, I don't care. I'm 16. I got a date. I can't take my mom on a date with me. I can't have my dad driving me to a girl's house. That's embarrassing. What, are you crazy? I mean, we chuckle because we see these things. And two adolescents over here are going, God, you know, you've seen this, huh? But it's so, and it's true, and it hasn't changed. Adolescence is different because of the outside environment they have to live in. It's a tougher world out there. And as Bill said, I have 1 foot in L.A. and 1 foot here, and I can't wait till I can put both feet here and firmly plant them in the ground and not move. But in L.A., it's a tough scene. You know, I'm starting to get a sense, because I've been talking to some teens up here, and I'm starting to get a sense of, you know, Alvarado Boulevard, you know, that's a place to hang out. I said, really, what's it like out there? Oh, you know, it's not too bad, but it's pretty tough. Piece of cake. Piece of cake. I don't know about those of you who have grown up here or been here a long time. Alvarado Boulevard, I could lie down there 2 a.m. and not be frightened. In L.A., you couldn't do that. I mean, the gangsters down in L.A., and I don't see any gangsters here, so I assume I'll be okay when I leave, the gangsters here be eaten alive by the guys down south. I don't go anywhere without putting a crook lock or a club on my car. I don't even, when I drive up here, I don't even use one. I relax up here. Teenagers can't relax in L.A. There is no relaxing. And it's tough, and it's different. So they're starting to feel like they're closer to that adult level at 15, 16, and they want to do more adult things because they're told they can drive. 2 years they can vote. In my day, 2 years they had to go to war or something else. I remember at 18 sitting with my buddies watching the lottery come up on the thing going, holy cow, that's my, oh, there's my birthday, uh-oh. And dealing with what that's about and talking about what we were going to do. Adolescents now don't have to deal with wars, but there's a trend going on if you look around. It is a war zone. Yes, it is a war zone. It's one of the reasons I'm leaving LA. I've had enough. And it is a war zone down there. And it is a war zone in some respects in that with adolescents, because there's constantly peer picking going on. But adolescents now are not finishing school as much. I've never remembered a day when colleges had to advertise on TV to get people to come to them. People aren't finishing school. It's a tougher way, because we at least had the dream. You know? And it was weird, because I went to Berkeley, and during those days, as you all remember, but as soon as finals were over and it was semester break, geez, where'd all the radicals go? Oh, they went home. You know, they still had the dream, no matter what they were doing. There isn't as much a dream now, and kids are more frustrated, they're more depressed. The thing that turned me onto it quickest was I was watching some show, or maybe the news, and they were talking about slam dancing about 10 years ago. Now, we did some pretty incredible dances. There were some weird names, mashed potatoes, twists, you know, all kinds of weird stuff. But I don't remember anyone saying that the mode of dancing was beating each other up, was hitting bodies in violence. That's gang stuff. They live in violence, they grow up in violence, acceptance is violence. But to see teenagers in general slamming each other as a mode of fun, that scared me. Then I knew we were in trouble. That violence is an everyday thing, not just for gangsters, but that there's so much frustration, that's how they're letting it out, and I got nervous. And that's the difference. I mean, it's harder. I'd much rather grow up in the 60s than now as a teenager. And it wasn't easy then. So, cognitions are changing, sexuality is changing, a lot more homophobia going on in the mid-adolescent stage, kids calling each other names, more so the name-calling in the early adolescence, but still the fear of that, because now I don't have experience on who I am sexually. I don't have experience of who I am, and I don't mean sexually in terms of the act, in terms of identity, as a man, as a woman, as you're heading into that adult area. Well, gee, am I okay? I have these confusing feelings. I can't talk to my parents about it. It's embarrassing. Or they tell me they don't want to talk about it, either by their actions or their words. And I don't know what to do with how I feel about myself. I don't know what to do with how I feel about that guy or that girl. I don't know what to do with how I feel about how I'm supposed to look in the world as a guy or as a girl. And they don't have past experiences again to go on, so they're in a whole new world again. And it's frightening. You know, think about yourself as a woman. Think about yourself as a man. You know, we have a sense of that. We're pretty sure of that. We may not always be sure of that. But we have experiences to lean on. We have norms to check out. We have therapists to go to. Teenagers look around and go, nobody talks, nobody deals with stuff. And they're still confused. They're still frightened. But they're not going to act frightened. They're going to act tough. Because it's not cool if your ego is being accepted by other peers to have that being a problem. So when friendships are very intense, phone calls start increasing, secrecy starts increasing, moving a lot more away. It says here, I'll read this to you verbatim because I think it fits. Parents become undervalued fallen idols. We don't like that. We were, when they were this high, we were gods. We could do no wrong. We said, go over there. They went over there. We said, get your jacket on, it's cold outside. They got their jacket on. We were always right. Now we're always wrong. And I don't like that. And I don't like that you don't want to be with me. And there's a real control battle. If I help parents and teenagers deal with anything, if I have dealt with them over 20 years, it's a theme, it is control battles. I say to parents, get out of it. Get out of that control battle. You are locked in a control battle, and I'll tell you something right here. You won't win. The old saying, you'll win the battle, but you won't win the war, that's a theme in adolescence. You can't win the war, because they're going to become adults one way or the other, and they'll become one with you or without you. And you can lose them. You cannot control them. Now, parents look at me. I used to run parent groups. I used to run what was fun. I ran some groups for a while with two other therapists, a multi-parent group. We had like 10 parents and their adolescents come in, and we just went at it. It was great. Parents were just amazed what was going on. But you won't win with control battles. And parents look at me and say, oh, sure, easy for you to say. Just turn over the... I wasn't a parent at that point of an adolescent. They said, sure, easy for you. Just turn over the control. Let them run wild. Let them have all the say. No problem. And the parents get caught in all or nothing. Get caught in either control them or let them run wild. It's not the deal. Well, I want to move on because we're getting a little late in time. Late adolescence. Okay, what happens there? Grace. You're through it. You light candles. You go to dinner. You have a good time. And I mean it. I tell parents when they got a 50-year-old, I say, got 2.5 years left. What happens at 17 and a half? The ego that's involved with the peers works for you. How does it work for you? Kids are taking PSATs. They're taking SATs. People are going to college. Graduation. I had a 17-year-old say, I only got one more year to party because then I've got to be an adult and life's going to be terrible. That's what he believed. I said, well, maybe. Let's talk about that. But that's what they believe. Teens see teens as being over almost at 18 because they know it's serious. They're already in high school hearing from you, hey, get those grades. This is your future. You don't get into a good college, you're not going anywhere. You don't know what you're going to do now? Uh-oh. You don't know what you're going to major in? Uh-oh. You know you got the SAT in a year. What are you doing about it? Taking the prep class? We ought to sign you up for the prep? We're going to sign you up for the prep class. They're already feeling that. And well, that's already enough stress. But at 70 and a half, they feel it. You know it, but they start feeling it. Kids are talking about what college you're going to go to. If they're not going to college, where they might work? Are their parents going to support them? Are there, or who's being thrown out at 18? Yeah, my dad said he can't wait 6 more months and I'm out. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm out. And it starts working. They start thinking in terms of the future. They really start connecting at about 17 and a half with the future, not the now. See, from 11 to 17, it's all about now. Where I am with the peers, what I'm doing, am I cool, what's going on, am I accepted, am I hanging out, who am I hanging out with, all that. Now it's like they're starting to grieve the fact they're not going to be seeing their friends as much because they're going to go to different colleges, or some are going to go to college, some are going to stay in the town. They start thinking in terms of seriousness. Relationships get more serious. They may not be thinking in terms of marriage, but they're thinking serious. It's not the 2 to 4 month relationship maybe going on from 11, well not 11, but 15 to 17 and a half in the mid-adolescence. It's more serious now. Boyfriends and girlfriends are thinking, my God, if you go to that college and I go to that college, I'm not going to see you ever again. And they start grieving. They don't have to do with that either. That's a new one. New feeling. Loss. Loss of someone they love. Parents say, except you're going to be there forever, they figure. But a boyfriend or a girlfriend? Uh-oh. You're not going to be in my life anymore? It's a lot. And they start thinking about the future, and they start to even look to you a little bit for some help. And they start to focus on where they're going. Because again, ego with adolescence is the peers. And the peer group is saying, so, what are you doing in 4 months when we graduate? And people start, and they start moving in that way. And they start becoming a lot more involved with a little more in terms of families. They even start to feel a little guilty about some of the separation in terms of leaving you. You know, there's some very difficult separation anxiety and things that go on with teenagers at 13. Most of the reasons why I see teenagers get suicidal at 13 is because parents are holding on. Everything in their being as an adolescent is saying, move on. But if I move on and they're holding on, or if they need me to stay, how am I going to move on and not feel guilty? And they get caught. And they can't get out somewhat in terms of what they need to do because they're looking back to protect a parent, especially single parents. Or marriages where the husband and wife are not close and one of the parents has pulled that son or daughter in too close to fill up the gap of the marriage. Well, how does that 13-year-old go out when the parent has always let them know in every aspect of their life, I need you. You're the one keeping me sane in this marriage. They feel very guilty leaving, and there's a lot of stress and pull that goes on with that and real serious stuff. It's workable, but it often happens, especially in single parents' home, and divorce is high in this country. So it happens a lot. Marriages are not happy. Happens a lot. People stay for the kids, and the kids suffer. So there's some anxiety and guilt about leaving the parents because they're leaving the nest. And again, if the kids have been the reason parents have stayed together, the kids know that. They don't talk about it, but they know it. And they go, oh my God, I'm leaving. So what's going to happen to mom and dad? Like, they don't like each other. What's going to happen when I leave? So there's guilt about that. And then there's guilt about just the feeling the emptiness and the sense of leaving that parents have. That's where you have to really hold tight to the fact that we had children and raised them to leave us. If you can hold on to that, you know they're just leaving geographically, they'll be back. Believe me, semester break, they're back. My parents used to say, the phone never rings around here until you get home from college. I said, yeah, I know. They'll come back. You try to hold on to them, they won't come back. They won't come back to a place that's going to grab them around the throat and squeeze. You know, what is that Zen proverb? You have to, you know, if you, not remembering, but something about if you can let go, if you can let someone go, they can come back. You hold on tight, they won't. Especially adolescents. So the good news is late adolescence, and I put it up to 24 because people are going, certainly when this was done, a lot of people are going to college. Well, college is still a child role. It's a better child role. You're on your own, you're studying, but people still tell you what to do, and it's still in a certain path and a certain pattern. So, I don't think adulthood, in fact, I was giving this talk to some adolescent fellows at Children's Hospital, and I told them that late adolescents went to 24, and 3 of them picked their heads up as they were almost falling asleep. And they looked at me like, because they were only 23, and I was telling them they weren't adults yet, they're dealing with life and death as docs. But it's true. I don't think adulthood starts till 26. Starts. I'm not saying you're full on into it, I mean starts. And Gail Sheehy in Passages, which came out in the 70s, talks about between 28 and 32, there's a major shift in how we think about ourselves and think about who we are. and how men and women think about themselves and families and children and work shifts between 28 and 32. Okay, so that's an overview of the aspects of difference in adolescence, and I, as I said, this will be available to all of you to peruse and look over, so it'll be in the back table. Okay, so now you're starting to get a different perspective of who they are and what they are. How do you deal with them? Because they're still teenagers.